So let me extend my welcome to everyone today to our audio conference workshop entitled Using Spiritually Modified Cognitive Behavioral Therapy in Practice, an Evidence-Based Perspective, led by Dr. David Hodge, Assistant Professor in the Department of Social Work at Arizona State University and a Senior Non-Resident Fellow at a Program for Research on Religion and Urban Civil Society at the University of Pennsylvania. David's audio conference... Welcome, Carol. Glad you made it on. We're just doing introduction.
Thank you. Okay.
David's audio conference will review that although social workers are interested in using spiritual interventions in practice settings, little content has appeared in the literature to guide practitioners in the use of such interventions. Using an evidence-based perspective, the presentation will focus on one particular therapeutic modality, spiritually modified cognitive behavioral therapy. Modifying traditional CBT self-statements with beliefs and values drawn from clients' spiritual narratives may result in enhanced outcomes for some spiritually motivated clients. Potential enhancements include faster recovery, improved treatment compliance, lower post-treatment relapse, and reduced treatment disparity. The presentation will conclude by illustrating, with the help of audio conference participants, the construction of spiritually modified CBT self-statements that reflect common Islamic and Christian values. Just before we begin our session, let me go over a couple of important housekeeping items. First of all, and many of you can probably hear some of the background noise that occurs when you have this many callers, we'll be using a muting function to eliminate that background noise that might compete with David's presentation. However, although for when David's speaking, you won't be able to ask questions, at several intervals, we'll be able to disable the muting function and enter a live mode so that you can make comments or raise questions for discussion. Just be aware that during these live portions of the conference, any background noise in your office or home will be heard by all of the 35 or other 40 participants, so just to give you fair warning. Secondly, a reminder that today's call will be recorded for folks who can't participate in the call but are interested in the material, and it's our obligation to make sure you know that this will be a recorded session. Thirdly, if at all possible, we encourage you to follow the PowerPoint presentation that David put together and that we provided access to when you registered for the audio conference. If for some reason you haven't been able to access the outline or aren't able to access it currently, just send me an email right away to rick@nacsw.org, and I'll shoot you an email with a link, or I'll send you an email attachment with that PowerPoint so you have it at your disposal. Lastly, when we do questions and answers, because we're a fairly large group, please do your best to keep your questions and comments crisp and to the point, and we can keep the session moving at a good pace for all of us. So without any further ado, I'm just delighted to present, actually for our third time, David's our first three-time audio conference presenter, Dr. David Hodge. David, I'll probably start at the beginning by muting folks because there does seem to be a fair amount of background noise.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Rick. Certainly, it's a pleasure to be here, and I hope that you all will be able to get something out of this presentation that you find useful in your practice of social work. So I'll move on to our first slide, presentation overview, and that just gives sort of a summary of what we're going to be talking about today. So first of all, we'll talk about the use of spiritual interventions in practice, more specifically, just how widely used spiritual interventions are social work practice settings. I think the evidence in this area is pretty interesting. Then we'll talk a little bit about evidence-based practice and what are two specific frameworks that are commonly used within evidence-based practice to assess the effectiveness of various types of interventions, including spiritual interventions. Then we'll talk about the research on spiritually modified cognitive behavioral therapy from an evidence-based perspective, and we'll overview four outcomes that may be enhanced through the use of spiritually modified CBT. And then we'll go over, from a theoretical perspective, the process of modifying secular CBT self-statements that conform to clients' spiritual belief systems. Then we'll actually practice constructing some spiritually modified CBT self-statements. So moving on to the next slide, I thought that we would just, before we get into the heart of the presentation, that we'd just spend a little bit of time defining spirituality, religion, and the relationship between these two constructs, since that's sort of what we're talking about. So in terms of defining, moving on to the next slide, in terms of defining spirituality and religion, there's no real agreement among scholars or practitioners. There's a lot of debate in the literature, and there has been no consensus that's emerged regarding how these two particular terms should be understood. Moving on to the next slide, this is a study that I did with a nationally representative sample of graduate students, of MSW students that are affiliated with NASW. So these are their definitions of spirituality. So I asked them, how would you define spirituality? And these are the various categories that emerged after analysis. So roughly a third defined spirituality in personally constructed terms with no mention of the transcendent, no mention of a God, no mention of a higher power or anything beyond the individual. Now moving on to the next slide, there are definitions of religion. Now what's interesting about these various definitions of religion is that while definitions of spirituality tended to fall into individual distinct categories, when people define religion, they use more than one term or more than one concept to define religion. And so as a result, these percentages add up to more than 100. And you can see that there's some overlap between the two definitions. Moving on to the next slide, that's the relationship between spirituality and religion. And you can see that roughly half of the sample said that some kind of relationship exists between spirituality and religion, which I think is a good response. You can see that a little bit further down, 6% said no relationship exists between spirituality and religion. And I'm always a little bit concerned about that because for many clients, spirituality and religion are related. So moving on to the next slide, this is a study conducted by the Gallup organization, and they took a random sample of the U.S. population. Even though it's only small, the N is 100, this gives us, I think, a fairly accurate snapshot of how the general U.S. population defines spirituality. And roughly 70% define spirituality as some type of relationship with a transcendent entity, either something beyond the individual or a god or a higher power. Then approximately 30% made no mention of the transcendent. So the next slide is my own personal definition of spirituality. So I define spirituality as individuals' existential relationship with God or however they perceive transcendent reality. So that would be pretty similar to most of the U.S. population, at least. It would be consistent with or congruent with how most people would define spirituality. Now the next slide is my definition of religion. So I understand religion as flowing from spirituality, expressing the spiritual relationship in particular forms, beliefs, and practices that are developed in community. That's very important, in community with others that share similar experiences of transcendent reality. So spirituality tends to be more individualistic, somewhat malleable, it can change over time, whereas religion tends to be more of an expression of spirituality and tends to have more of a community focus. So moving on to the next slide, there's these two egg-shaped ovals. And what this is supposed to depict is that spirituality and religion are overlapping concepts or constructs. And so, for most people, they would be in the center, in the overlapping area. So most people in the U.S. would tend to define as both spiritual and religious. But there would be some people that would self-identify as being spiritual, but not religious. And so those individuals would tend to fall into what some people call the New Age movement or syncretic spirituality. So their spirituality would be completely divorced of any type of community entity. They would practice their spirituality strictly by themselves, apart from a small group or any kind of community forum. And on the other side, you would have people that would be religious but not spiritual. So these might include people that would, let's say, attend a church or a synagogue or a temple or a mosque just because their spouse attends, or they think it might be good for their children to be exposed to moral values or something along those lines, but they wouldn't have that personal connection with God. So that's one way of looking at spirituality and religion that I think is helpful. So are there any questions about that before we move on?
Okay, David, I've opened up the lines.
Okay. Any questions about that or just some basic definitions? Okay, well, I guess we're all on the same page, so we can move on to the next section. So that's the use of spiritual interventions in practice settings. So moving on to our next slide, which is definitions. So this is a common definition of an intervention, a process designed to change an individual's cognition, behavior, or emotional state. So building upon that, a spiritual intervention can be understood as a therapeutic strategy that incorporates the spiritual or religious dimensions as a central component of the intervention. Moving on to our next slide, this is I won't spend too much time on this, but this is kind of a theoretical model of how spirituality may engender or cause various positive outcomes. So on one side you have spirituality and spiritual tradition or religion. Then on the other side you have these various positive health and mental health outcomes, such as reduced alcohol, tobacco, and other drug usage, or decreased morbidity, and that should be decreased mortality, not morality. And increased resiliency and coping, increased pro-social attitudes and behaviors, increased mental health. Then in the middle, you have these various pathways. So these are pathways through which spirituality and religion may cause these various salutary outcomes. So through, for instance, health promotive behaviors or lifestyles. So if you remember a faith tradition, for example, that suggests that it's not a good idea to smoke or use alcohol, and that's going to lead to reduced alcohol, tobacco, and other drug usage. So our interventions are sort of targeted towards those various pathways. So we seek to alter something in those central pathways. So that's just a way of thinking about this conceptually. So moving on to our next slide. So this is a national sample of direct practitioners that are affiliated with NASW. This research was conducted by Canda and Furman in 1999, about 10 years or so ago now. So what they found is pretty high levels of spiritual practices. So 87% reported using non-sectarian spiritual language or concepts in their practice of social work. And a further 81% reported recommending participation in a religious or spiritual support system. 68% reported using religious language or concepts. So it's a little bit lower. So the top one, 87%, was the use of spiritual language or concepts. So people seem to be more comfortable using spiritual language or concepts than religious language or concepts. And 63% reported helping clients develop religious or spiritual rituals as a clinical intervention. Now these frequencies really surprised a lot of people. And because this would suggest that most social workers are using some kind of spiritual intervention in their practices. And it's been critiqued by people that have pointed out, well, the response rate is only 26%. And so that's something to bear in mind. So it may be the case that people that are really invested in spirituality and religion disproportionately responded to Canda and Furman's survey. So moving on to the next slide, which is a national sample of gerontological social workers that came from NASW and GSA. So this is a different sample, gerontological social workers. And what's nice about Murdoch's particular study that was conducted in 2004 is that she provided sort of a more nuanced understanding of how people responded by actually breaking out the response categories into often, sometimes, or never. And the questions were similar, but there was also some differences too. So for instance, she combined using religious or spiritual language instead of breaking them out as Canda and Furman did. So we see again that 82% either often or sometimes use spiritual or religious language, so well over three-quarters of the sample. And again, well over three-quarters of the sample recommended a support group. And then again, over two-thirds report that they help clients reflect upon death, and over half reported that they help clients fill up rituals at least sometimes or often. Now, the response rate for this study was a little bit higher, but it's still pretty marginal in the sense that only a third of the people responded. So moving on to our next slide, which is licensed clinical social workers in the Mid-Atlantic state. This was conducted a little bit more recently. So again, we see pretty high rates of use of spiritual interventions in practice settings, with 82% reporting either using spiritual or religious language or concepts, 81% have recommended participating in a religious or spiritual program, 67% report helping clients develop religious or spiritual rituals, and then 75% report helping clients consider the spiritual meaning of their current life situation, and then almost everybody, 98%, report helping clients reflect upon belief about loss or other difficult life situation. And again, almost 100%, 93% more specifically, report helping clients consider the ways that their religious or spiritual beliefs are helpful in their practice of social work. And the response rate is 43%, so we're getting close to the 50% that a number of authorities suggest is necessary in order to be able to generalize the response to the whole sample. So this Mid-Atlantic state is probably, knowing the author, it's probably Virginia, and Virginia is not known as being one of a Bible Belt state, and so it's just interesting that these high levels of use of spiritual interventions are being reported. Okay, our next slide is a sample of social workers affiliated with a regional southeastern chapter of NASW. And so again, we see that there's pretty high usage, so a little bit, actually it's a little bit lower in this sample. So 70% report using religious or spiritual language or concepts, and 55% report recommending participation in a program, and 25%, which is lower than some of the previous studies we've seen, report helping clients develop a ritual as a practice intervention. Now the response rate for this was 84%, so we can be pretty confident that these percentages, these frequencies, actually do represent what's going on in the field. So moving on to the next study, which is a sample of direct practitioners affiliated with a New York chapter of an ASW, excluding those people residing in New York City. So the authors told me that there was an extra charge associated with getting social workers that were living in New York City to participate in this, and so they couldn't afford it. So it's people in New York, further north in New York City. And they had a good response rate, close to 60%, so again, we can be fairly confident about these responses. And 77% report using spiritual language or concepts, and 57% report recommending participation in a spiritual program. Okay, I think this is our last study. Our next slide is our last study, and this is a national sample of board-certified clinical social workers who report working with youth, children, and adolescents. 42% response rate, so it's below 50, but fairly close to 50, the cutoff rate. And so again, we see fairly high percentages. So for instance, 92% report that they help children or youth reflect upon beliefs about loss or other difficult life situations. 60% report, down at the bottom of the slide, report helping youth or children reflect upon what happens after death, and 56% report teaching or recommending meditation. So moving on to our next slide to summarize. So many practitioners appear to use spiritual interventions, and based upon the existing evidence, I think we can say that most practitioners are actually using spiritual interventions at least sometimes in their practice of social work. And that seems to hold true across various types of clinical social workers, whether they're working with children and youth or the elderly or just general social work practice. Now, what's interesting is that even though there's this really wide use of spiritual interventions in the field, very few guidelines have emerged regarding the use of spiritual interventions. There's been a number of people that have pointed out that there's been very little that has been developed to sort of guide practitioners or to help practitioners work with clients' spirituality in an ethical and professional way. And as part of part of the evidence for that argument. There's been many of these same surveys that we've gone over have asked various social